If there's one thing I know for sure, it's that someday years from now, when you're old and gray, you'll look back with a smile and a sigh, and you'll always clearly remember your first issue of that comic book you liked so much. And with that in mind, welcome back to The Comics That We Love, a show where I sit down with a guest each week to take our favorite stories in comics and dissect what makes them great. Sometimes I fly solo and tell you about a character, sometimes about the books I'm reading, and sometimes the creators themselves will join in and help us understand their process and how they attack their work. I am your superstar mech pilot and podcast host, Zach McCrary. I haven't been keeping up with my vast stack of comics lately, and I felt it was time to get back on the horse and ride. And with that, I thought it would be fun to focus completely on new books that are only one issue deep, and see if I need to spend more money than I should every month. So come with me, and let's have a couple firsts together. So without further adieu, hop on that stair climber, beep your horn at that jerk who just merged into the lane and didn't use his turn signal, pretend you're getting something important done at work, and let's talk about recent number ones, shall we?
That we love.
Now, being that I am who I am, you know that I had to start this off with a Tom King joint, especially one that reunites him with the whole team that made Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow such an incredible book. If you want to hear me talk about that one, it's back on episode 88 during Souptember. This past September, I talked about Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, so check that out. But yeah, I've been waiting for this one to drop. That is Helen of Windhorn, number one, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Evely, colors by Mateus Lopez, letters by Clayton Cowles. Man, regardless of whether I read it in the moment that I had it, you know, I had to have it. I just, like, even if I didn't have time to read it, I just had to make sure that I had it in my possession. And I'm glad I got to it just in time for issue 2, which came out this past week, actually, as of the dropping of this episode. So this comic starts out almost like the movie Titanic, or the sequel to Young Guns. I friggin' love Young Guns movie. Both those movies are amazing. Emilio Estevez as Billy the Kid is my jam. I digress. We have an old woman being interviewed with an important time in her younger years, or about an important time in her younger years, where she spent some time with important people and saw important things. It's that kind of deal. That's the vibe I got anyway. So quickly we shift into a period piece. We follow our narrator, Ms. Appleton, who is that old woman but now young, as she goes to a small town to wrangle the granddaughter of a wealthy socialite. She finds a drunk 16-year-old girl living wild and free after the passing of her father, who was a renowned writer, and the girl's name is Helen Cole, and Ms. Appleton is to return her to her family estate and take care of her. The family estate? Windhorn, of course. The first issue feels like it's setting a tone for a very straightforward coming-of-age story where a slightly older woman helps a young girl become a woman, and along the way the girl reminds her mentor that it's okay to loosen up. That's the vibe. But then at the end, a whole extra world of possibilities opens up. Honestly, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I had a feeling that before the issue ended, something was going to shake up this very normal tale, and it's Tom King. He isn't making a Downton Abbey story, though I'd read it if he did. And he didn't disappoint. The first issue leaves you with a ton of questions and really puts us on an interesting path. By the way, I'm still convinced I nailed what the tale of Appleton and Helen will be, but there's just so much more about to happen to them and around them. I'm very excited to read issue number 2, basically the minute this podcast is finished. And I have to talk Bilquis Evely. She is an artist I wholly was unfamiliar with until reading Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. But since then, I've become such an immense fan. The level of detail she brings to the settings, her style of drawing people, especially women, she has this certain kind of face that she draws. Much like if you look at a drawing by Jack Kirby, you know it was Jack Kirby by that face. And I feel the same way about her. And there's this like symmetry of her feminine faces, the way she draws eyes and the swirls of hair that I love to look at in her comics. Like, she draws beautiful women, and it's just really appealing to me. I don't know if that explained it at all, but I'm not an artist, so that's the best I can do. But yeah, if you loved the art in Supergirl, you're going to be thrilled by this. Mateus Lopez brings a very similar color palette to this book, less unearthly though, very grounded in our world and the 1920s, but still that sort of light, almost pastel feel that works so beautifully with what Bilquis is giving him. For real, if you're sleeping on this one, don't. Check out Helen of Windhorn. I have a feeling that it is going to be quite the romp. Our second book, Dawn Runner number 1, Dark Horse Comics, written by Ram V, art by Evan Cagle, colors by the incomparable Dave Stewart, and letters by Aditya Bidikar. Big mechs? Check. Ram V's story? Check. Art inspired by things like Neon Genesis Evangelion? Check. Kaiju? Check. Dawn Runner, even on the surface, has it all. From the cover of the first issue, they had me. That retro sci-fi anime logo, the art being reminiscent of Japanese animation I watched as a kid, I knew this book would be for me, and I was right. Ram V never disappoints, let's be honest. Yes, this is only the first issue, but what it does is succinctly set up this entire world for us. Yes, you could easily make parallels to Guillermo del Toro's visual buffet, Pacific Rim, but as Sun Tzu once said, there is nothing new under the sun. I wonder how many times I've used that quote on this show. Anyway. What Ram V does is take a similar opening premise and make it his own. The idea that the act of fighting this 100-year war against giant monsters called Tetsa in this book has become a sporting event just so that people can take their minds off of the war itself is brilliant. It's like a what would Caesar do kind of moment. We follow this superstar mech pilot, or as they call mechs in this world, Iron Kings, as she is piloting a brand new kind of IK that supposedly makes the person in control fully become one with the IK. And in the process of taking this new Iron King, called Dawnrunner by the way, on a test run to fight an easy kill Tetsa, something strange happens, and we'll leave it at that. I don't want to go too deeply into that because that's kind of the crux of where this book is going, and it's the climax of the first issue. But let me just tell you, it had me. This book beautifully builds intrigue and really left me with a WTF moment at the end that made me want more. I'm so excited to read issue 2, which comes out the same day this episode drops. So look forward to me hitting Instagram to talk about that. I mean, Ram V, just when he does indie books, when he gets to do something that is all his own, number one, he always works with a great artist that fits whatever he is doing perfectly. And number two, the story is always just bonkers good. It's always something different. I mean, he's got so many. If you look at like The Many Deaths of Layla Starr or These Savage Shores or maybe even the two books that he's currently got out now, which would be like Rare Flavors and this one. Very different stuff. The guy is all over the place. He is definitely not a one-trick pony, which I appreciate as a fan of good writing. And this one, if what I just told you doesn't drag you in, I don't know what to tell you. I guess that's just not your jam. But Dawn Runner was a lot of fun. and he quickly sets up this world and gives us characters to find out more about. And yeah, I'm on board for issue number 2. I think you should check it out. So I picked up Rat City number 1, which was written and lettered by Erica Schultz, art by Zay Carlos, colors by J. David Ramos, FCO Plasencia, and Marcelo Iazzoli. All three were the colorists. I picked up Rat City number 1, thinking that the character on the cover resembling Spawn was just, you know, a variant. Image loves Spawn variant covers. It's a well-known fact. But that wasn't the case. Rat City is part of Todd McFarlane's new extended Spawn universe, dubbed the New You, which is such a 90s cool kid name. Come on. Tell me you don't see like a 12-year-old in a neon baseball cap with it on backwards and like big sunglasses saying, "It's the New You." Tell me you don't hear it. Tell me you don't see it. Anyway, I have no idea what went down exactly in Spawn number 350, but apparently it left a new ruler in hell and also left Al Simmons powerless on a different Earth than his own. And at the same time, however, whatever happened also affected the world that Rat City takes place in, which is not the same universe, I guess. I guess we're getting universe-y, multiverse-y. This one has a very 90s Image feel to it. A covert team goes into a futuristic city wearing big armor and weird headgear. They kill a bunch of people excessively, which is on purpose. And as they're leaving, their vehicles get attacked and most of them get killed. Except for two guys anyway, Peter and Reese. And Peter and Reese become part of this big government program and takes soldiers who've been injured on the battlefield and rebuilds them. And Reese gets new arms, Peter gets new legs. They get trained and monitored. Again, this all feels very 90s Image. Some stuff happens where they both wash out, and then this cataclysmic event happens that was caused by Spawn number 350, and suddenly things are different about Peter that he can't explain. I think they're setting this up for Peter to be like Spawn of the future, like Spawn 2099 in Spider-Man terms. I'm not sure where we're gonna go with this, but I am curious. The only problem is, I don't know anything about what has happened in Spawn since at least 1995. My last issues came with Volume 4. That's the last time I read this, which you can hear me discuss with my pal Rob Hoover on episode 64, by the way. So if this starts to interconnect with like all of the other Spawny stuff, I might check out. But if it does its own thing, I think I'm going to keep reading. This opening issue caught my interest enough. It didn't blow me away, but I am curious to see where it goes. It was fast-paced, had a lot of action, and made me want to find out who our mystery narrator is, because there is someone who is telling the story that isn't Peter. And the writing, the art, etc., all was a solid B for me. And I don't mean that as a knock, just that it did enough. It did enough to make me want to give it the old 4-issue try before I decide to keep on or stop. If you're a Spawnhead, you might want to give this one a go, because who knows, it might be pretty important down the road. If not, then you'll just have to read it and figure out for yourself, like I did, basically. But it was an interesting first issue. This one's not for the kids. There is blood. You watch someone get just shot in the face. Yeah, it happens. Give it a shot if this sounds up your alley. Hey, please don't skip ahead. Hear me out. This is something really important to me. I'm gonna forgo talking about Patreon. It's there if you would like to support the show. I'd appreciate that too. But I'm running a GoFundMe campaign to help people who are near to my heart. My brother-in-law, Nia, is currently in a hospital in Ho Chi Minh City. The diagnosis is brain tumors. There's worry that it's spread. We don't know the severity yet. We don't know if it's malignant or benign. They are doing tests on that. But he is in a lot of pain, and so is his family, my family. I wanted to help out somehow, because, see, my wife's family helped a lot with getting her and my son to the United States. None of us are wealthy people, and consequently, their coffers were drained a lot by that act of kindness. My in-laws are amazing, sweet people who would do anything to help someone they care about, and I'm trying to return that favor. Nia is going to have a lot of medical bills that his wife and his parents aren't going to be able to afford. So, if you could see it in your heart to give even 5-10 bucks to this cause to help one of the first people to embrace me into the family and make me feel welcome in a foreign land, I would be forever in your debt. A share to help boost the signal would be amazing as well. And a link to Nia's GoFundMe is in the show notes here and is also linked in my Instagram profile. So thank you ahead of time. It means the world to me. It really, really means the world to me. So if you can give or you can share this post and help boost the signal, thank you. And back to the show. Next up was a book called When the Blood Has Dried, Number 1, from Mad Cave, written by Gary Maloney, art by Daniel Romero. Now, in the book, he is named Daniel Romero. On the Mad Cave website, it's Daniel Romero Ulloa. I'm not sure which he prefers to go by. I assume just Romero, since it was on the book. But letters by Becca Carey. This one caught my eye based on, number one, a badass cover, and by the name. Tell me that When the Blood Has Dried isn't a badass title for anything. For anything. Except maybe like for a prom or a wedding. I'm not attending Tammy and Tommy's When the Blood Has Dried wedding. Nope. RSVP, can't make it. No thanks. By the way, happy 10th anniversary to Mad Cave Comics. It's always cool to see publishers that don't have Mickey's money, or Bugs Bunny's money for that matter, showing longevity. Goes to show that they put out solid product. I know I've enjoyed a lot of their stuff since I first heard of Mad Cave, so again, happy 10th anniversary. Anyway, When the Blood Has Dried. It's a fantasy comic set in your typical Western European style fantasy land. The book starts out in medias res with a rainstorm in the night. We see a woman breathing heavily, surrounded by dead bodies. An elf comes up from behind her. She calls him Darius. They clearly know one another by their facial expressions. He calls her Maeve and says he expected too much from her. She puts herself before the guild, and they only have one law: no one is bigger than the guild. And then he looses an arrow at her, and the scene ends. This is a crazy good setup by Gary Maloney. Right off the bat, I'm invested in what's happening, and now I want to know how we got there. How did Maeve go into business for herself? What is her connection to Darius? So many questions. And from there we flash forward 5 years. And we find Maeve is alive. She's running an inn with the help of a crotchety old dwarf named Fergus. We also meet a butcher named Queven. And by the way, I'm loving all the Gaelic names, because like these are look up the pronunciation names, which I had to do. And I'm a big fan of Gaelic names. So we got this Queven guy who is clearly a close friend to Maeve, and maybe could become more after she deals with the loss of someone from a prior year. See, still more questions, more setup. We see her as a full-fledged member of the town. She's the barkeep, and everyone knows her. And again, this raises so many questions that I'm eager to see parsed out. How did she survive? Did Darius let her go? Is Fergus part of this? Did he save her? What happened? The story is mostly set up here, leading to the revelation that the Adventurers Guild is looking to set up shop in this sleepy town, and Maeve doesn't look too thrilled about it. Our last sight, Darius arriving into town. This is a perfect first issue, in my opinion. It introduces us to a bunch of characters, and with very few words or actions, it lets us know their significance to Maeve in this town, and I love Romero's art. It fits the story really well. That opening sequence was so well done. Oh, and I forgot to mention Becca Carey adding opening credits like out of a movie to the beginning. In each panel, you get like written by, art by, which I thought was pretty cool, gave it kind of a special feel. But back to Romero, I especially like his facials. I guess I have a thing for faces today. He's good at emoting the characters and letting us know how they're feeling without any words from Maloney. And that's a special talent. They also show the wear of living in this world, which is something that I appreciate. The settings are gorgeous too. Towards the front of the book, there is a gorgeous splash page of the town. It made me want to play like Final Fantasy or Skyrim or something RPG. Yeah, I'm intrigued to see where this one goes. I love fantasy stuff, and When the Blood Has Dried has definitely piqued my interest. So if you're a fantasy buff like I am, I suggest checking it out. Our last book for the week was Akugan, Brutalizer of Gods number 1 from Oni Press, written by Murewa Ayodele, art by Doton Akande, colors by D. Kunif, letters by Hassan Otsman Elhau. If you get a chance to go to Oni Press's website and check out these covers, man, I love all the covers for this book, but especially the E cover by David Mack. It's banging. I'd have that on my wall. It's a beautiful, beautiful cover. Anywho, this is yet another solid read. The problem with me doing these number one issue episodes is that it just adds more and more to my reading list, and that is a problem, but a good problem. There's just so many amazing creators putting out fantastic content. I digress again. If you're unfamiliar with Ayodele and Akande, they did the book I Am Iron Man, and also the book I know them from, which was Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood. Check both of those out. I haven't read I Am Iron Man, I've heard good things, but that Moon Knight book was a lot of fun. So, Akugan, Brutalizer of Gods. I love Oni Press's comparisons because they were exactly my thought when I was reading this comic. Firstly, they say it's, quote, a new epoch of African dark fantasy. And this one is definitely not for the kiddos, by the way. They compare it to Robert E. Howard's Conan the Barbarian, to Stanley and Jack Kirby's Thor, and to the video game franchise God of War. All of these are very apt. All of them. Our first issue covers a lot of ground, like a lot of ground. It's a creation myth for the Earth. It's the setup for a tale of revenge. It's the origin story of our main protagonist. In between there, we get a little sex and a lot of violence. The book opens with the creation of the world by a fallen god named Obatala. We find out he's got very Loki vibes in that he's committed crimes in heavens and came to Earth to make his own way. But the gods aren't having that, and they sent the god of war, Ogun, to bring him back. And that doesn't go well. But out of this, we spiral into the origin tale of our protagonist, Akugan. Akugan? I think it's Akugan. And we see what ties him directly to Obatala. We go through the life of Akugan and see him grow into a fierce warrior and monster hunter. And I love the way this story was put together. We jump around the timeline a lot, but never once was it jarring. It always made sense, and the flow never felt broken. And the portion about Akugan and the death of his parents gave me hard Conan the Barbarian vibes and really set us up to root for him, in my mind. There are some really cool action sequences too. I really like the designs for the monsters and for all our characters as well, like which is all Akande, I assume. They did a great job bringing these characters to life and making the book feel fantastical and in such a different way than we typically assume we're going to get in a fantasy story. A story like this, I don't want there to be anything truly grounded, you know? I mean, other than the human story of revenge. But give me big monsters, give me badass-looking gods, give me a massive, muscly warrior hero, give me all of that. And Akugan Brutalizer of Gods does just that. And I can't wait to see where we're going to go from here. And that's all the time I had for reading this week. I'd call it pretty quality reading, and time well spent. Let me know what you've been reading, any good number ones I should check out, or even the first couple issues of a series. Help me spend my money and earn the stink eye from my wife. comment on Instagram posts of this episode, hit me on Twitter, or email me at comicsthatwelove@gmail.com and let me know what books I should check out. Until next week, read something cool. And that's a wrap for this week. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review and leave us a user review on your favorite podcast app. It'll really help the show continue to grow and find new listeners. You know what else will? Tell a friend. Tell 10. If they like comics, they should know about the comics that we love. If you want to support the show and get lots of extra podcasts and other content as well, there is a Patreon that helps keep the lights on and internet connected so that we can continue bringing you that sweet nerd media. Links to that in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the show, and as always, keep reading, keep dreaming. Peace.
The comics that we love.